Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a tiny bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan!
Jordan.
This is an embarrassing question to ask.
Oh, great.
How long have we known each other? Probably a good 5 years now?
No, probably closer to 3 or 4.
3 or 4?
Yeah.
And this is a tough question for me to ask.
What's my birthday?
For real, are you Dan or Daniel? I have no idea.
When have I ever gone by Daniel?
I don't
know. Entire
no,
time?
Oh, no, no. I mean,
has ever called me Daniel?
Right, no, I mean birth name.
Oh, Daniel, yeah.
It is Daniel?
Yeah, yeah. I was Daniel for the first number of years of my life. And then I think somewhere around middle school, I started shortening it to Dan.
Yeah.
And never Danny. Absolutely
never
Danny.
Never
Chicago
Danny.
Comedian Danny Callis is literally
the only
person who's ever called me Danny, which I found to be aggressive. Since he's Danny, he wants everyone else to be Danny, too.
Hey, you want to be now.
I remember one time on the bus in junior high, a friend of mine, his older sister, they lived down the street from me. And so we all took the bus to school together. And she knew me when I was like in fourth and fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, why are you Dan now? You're Daniel. And I always felt very shamed by that. I still remember. They're like, what was I trying to be cool by being Dan? Like, it's just easier.
That's kind of like a my girl situation going on right there.
It was tough on that bus that day.
Well.
Also, I want to make a correction. On the last episode, you asked me what my favorite Pride memory was.
Uh-huh.
And I completely dropped the ball because I remember what it actually is. It was one time I was at Pride, had a few beers, and I was standing really close to the actual parade on the street. And who should come down the parade line, walking down the street, other than Rahm Emanuel, by himself, no security whatsoever, walks over to try and shake someone's hand, and the guy just flips him off. I thought it was amazing that, first of all, Rahm is just out there with everyone yelling at him,
completely
without security, just on his own, and then also just like thinking that he was going to get a good response, and the guy's like, fuck you, man. So that's probably my favorite
that's
memory.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So apologies that I forgot that in the moment, but it deserved telling. So this Jordan is a podcast where I know a lot about Alex Jones,
and I only know what you tell me.
Yeah, that's the fun. Also, I'd like to say thank you to Robert Evans and the Behind the Bastards podcast. We are guests on that this week.
Indeed, we are
talking about one health ranger, Mike Adams.
Oh, that piece of shit,
real piece of trash. The first episode will be out by the time this episode comes out, and I believe tomorrow the second part will be out. A lot of fun,
exciting. It was a great time, and yes. Thank you very much, Robert.
Yes. So I'd like to thank him, but also I'd like to thank some of the people who make this show possible, some of the donors out there who help us get along. So here's some shout-outs going out to them before we get into the episode proper.
Okay.
First, Jeff D., thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Next, Jesse, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Jesse. Next, Anna, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Anna.
Thanks, Anna.
Next, this person sent me some awesome audio that he has created of Alex Jones stuff.
Oh, yeah,
and
I
wish right now I could play some of it, but I didn't ask permission in advance.
Oh, no.
And I feel really guilty. But he's done some awesome Alex Jones-based music work.
It was very good, yeah.
So thank you so much, DJ Danarchy. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
If I get permission, I might play some in the future.
Is it Danarchy or Danarchy Yell?
Probably earlier in life it changed. Finally, I'd like to say thank you to somebody who donated on an elevated level. Appreciate it very much. So, Douglas M., you are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
All right, we got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right? Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why are you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large. I declare info war on you.
Thank you so much, Douglas M.
Thank you very much, Douglas.
For everyone who can't see us, which is everybody except me, Jordan was just practicing.
I'll get there.
He's practicing silently lipping along with the drop anticipation of being able to sing along with it, as it were.
There's something about the way he says, "I declare info war on you," that the timing is so Thelonious Monk. Like, it's just perfectly wrong.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. But what's perfectly right is our feelings about people who support the show. And if you would like to support the show, you can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com. Clicking the button that says support the show, we would appreciate it.
Please do.
So, Jordan, today we are back in the present. We are covering the span of June 23rd and 24th, which
right.
is Sunday and Monday of this week.
Both great days.
Yeah. And I alluded to you before the show that this wasn't a pleasant experience for me. And one of the reasons is not what anyone would expect. Based on the other stuff that Alex has been doing in the present day, when I say this is unpleasant, you would expect it's something disgusting and awful.
Yeah, yeah.
And
pseudo-sexual.
Yeah, it's more that I was having a real good time with it. And then I hit a brick wall. You know what I mean? It's not what you expect. Like the Sunday episode is so fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like we could do a Wacky Wednesday episode out of it.
Oh, shit.
You know, it has that flavor. It's a oasis in present-day Alex Jones that you do not see coming and is pretty all right. And then you get to Monday and it's just everything falls apart.
Oh, no.
And so that was my experience. And now as we record this on Tuesday, Monday is too fresh in my head and I'm bummed out about it.
Yeah, it's like if Sunday hadn't been as good, your expectations would have been lowered
exactly.
far enough that Monday would have been far less damaging.
Yeah, if Sunday was painful, Monday would have been it would have been doable.
But, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
Sunday
yeah.
being pleasant, not pleasant, that's far too much of a stretch. So here's an out of context drop from today's episode, and then we'll get into the business.
They're gonna fry you and your family real slow. Like a poached egg.
So what's the problem with that is that poached eggs are cooked by cracking eggs into hot but not boiling water and swirling the water around to gently create a pocket of egg white around the yolk. Another option for preparing a poached egg is using steam. One way you absolutely cannot do it is by frying. There are tons of ways to cook an egg, and poaching is one of the very few top-tier egg preparations that specifically doesn't involve frying. Small point, I think it's impressive that Alex pretty regularly manages to have 100 decent options to make a metaphor out of, and his stupid brain manages to choose the 101st option that is the only wrong one.
This
great.
Is fantastic.
I'm going to fry you like a poached egg.
You could have just said fried egg.
Totally. Scrambled.
This is right there.
Yeah, any of these.
Any eggs.
Yep. So we jump in here on the 23rd, and like I said, it was a respite in some ways, and that is because Alex is off the "I'm the victim of the globalists sending me illegal pornography" narrative.
Right.
Off Ebola. He's off all of these narratives. He's got a new one cooking, and it takes the whole show.
Really?
Almost the entire show is
no lawyers.
No lawyers.
No lawyers.
No Barnes.
Oasis.
No Norm.
Okay.
No guests at all.
Oh shit!
Really? And this narrative is fun.
Here's a headline. Mind control by cell phone. It's just all here. You're like, oh, that's like the movie The Kingsman. Yeah, but it's not a movie. Makes you irritable. Breaks up your family. Makes you all alone. Well, guess what? There's 14,000 square miles where the U.S. government has made cell phones illegal. Oh, and they did it? 40 years ago. Oh, and guess where the elite lives? Oh.
If you owe money to the IRS, you
cut
no,
off.
No, I need to know the end of that.
Cut off by the break.
No, they said to come into the we're about to find out where he lives.
The elites live there. So this is an offshoot of the 5G narrative.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But man, there's something really fun about this. There's 14,000 square miles where the globalists are heading, where it's illegal to use cell phones. He's got a real head of steam about this at the beginning of the show.
Okay.
He seems to have recently learned that there are parts of the country where cell phone use is illegal, which of course implies that these areas have no cell phone towers. Naturally, the conclusion he's come to is that the reason for this, it must be that the elites are heading there to guard themselves from the 5G that's going to fry the population like a poached egg.
That does sound right.
Unfortunately, as is so often the case, he's making this argument without knowing literally any details about what he's talking about. There is an area of 13,000 square miles in West Virginia where cell phone use is against the law. I'm not positive that the elites are moving en masse to West Virginia, and Alex isn't specific about who these elites are, so I'm going to leave that part alone.
Sure.
They didn't ban cell phone usage in that area of West Virginia because of fears about health problems caused by wireless. The reason they did it is way more interesting. The 13,000 square mile zone is centered around a town called Greenbank, population 143. The closer you get to Greenbank, the more restrictive the rules are about wireless usage. And that is because Greenbank is the home of a gigantic 17 million pound telescope, the largest steerable telescope in the world. It's operated by the National Radio Astronomy Observatory. Scientists who work at the telescope and smaller incorporated telescopes in the town are, quote, listening to exploding galaxies at the edge of the universe, a signal that's so faint that it's about a billionth of a billionth of a millionth of a watt. In comparison, a cell phone can emit around 3 watts, which would drastically interfere with the very delicate work these researchers are doing. Even though cell phones didn't exist when the telescope's research started, the location was specifically chosen for exactly that reason. Power lines, radar, and even spark plugs in cars can cause interference with their work, so the remoteness of Greenbank was essential if they were going to be able to make any progress in this work.
Right.
Work began at the site in 1959, so that's probably what Alex is talking about when he says the rules have been in place for 40 years. He's a little off on that specific stat, but it's close enough to feel like how he misinterprets things. A 2015 article about the town in CNN provides a really interesting glimpse into what a piece of shit Alex is. That clip that we just heard is part of Alex opening his show talking about how buying up land in these areas where there is no wireless allowed is going to be the next giant gold rush growth industry. He's suggesting to his audience that once 5G goes out, everyone in the normal world is going to get sick, and that if you buy up this land now, you're going to be safe and get fucking rich. That CNN article from 2015 ends by talking to 90-year-old resident Harold Christ, who ran afoul of the authorities in the Greenbank region. It turns out that his doorbell was interfering with the telescope research. But he didn't get arrested. The researchers just took the doorbell and retrofitted it so it would work but not interfere with the telescope anymore. It sounds like such a hassle of a way to live, right? Wrong. Quote, far from complaining about their circumstances, residents of these parts fear that their secret will get out, that vacation spots will pop up advertising this refuge from connectivity. They've already seen an influx of about a dozen electrosensitives, people who believe electromagnetic frequencies are the source of their illnesses. The main fear expressed by the area's residents is exactly what Alex is working toward bringing about by appealing to the same community of electrosensitives. Of course, he isn't trying to fuck with these people in Greenbank or anything. It's just a great example of how his stupid rhetoric has real-world consequences for people he doesn't give a fuck about, it doesn't care to understand at all. Everything about the way he's telling this story, and will go on to tell the story, is dishonest. And the end result is only going to be that the people of this town will have their lifestyles completely disrupted. And if I know anything about the kind of people that Alex would inspire to head out there, they're exactly the sort of people that would start fighting back against the telescope, intentionally interfering with its operations, and ironically cripple it from being able to help humanity get to the stars, which is supposed to be Alex's goal to begin with.
Yep.
This is a great narrative for Alex.
This is incredibly stupid.
Yeah.
This is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So
they're going to fuck up those people's lives.
You can kind of understand how when I jump in here on the Sunday expecting to see just trash, it's like, oh, wow, this is pretty fun.
Yeah.
Alex doesn't understand this telescope.
He just doesn't understand telescopes.
That's a big problem.
What nice researchers. They didn't take away his doorbell and just say, you have to have people knock now.
No.
He's 90 years old. They were like, hey, guess what? We'll make you a doorbell that doesn't interfere with billions of miles of galaxies exploding.
Yeah.
Cool.
Man, if you see the size of this telescope too, it's
really big.
Fucking crazy.
It's really
it's
big.
It's so huge. Like, it makes sense. It makes sense that they'd have to operate this way.
God, in 10 years, there's going to be fucking lunatics crawling all over that telescope trying to find out how it kills them.
And Alex will have played a role
in
their
sure.
being there.
For sure.
Because this gets more extreme as it goes along.
Oh, no.
I just wanted to make sure. I mean, there's a lot of information up top without Alex developing the theme as we usually like to do it. But I felt like it was important to let you know, like, this is the actual story.
Yeah.
And we can see how he deteriorates from there.
Once again, telescopes factor heavily into our podcast.
You can get booked on Project Camelot if you have a telescope. And Alex will be mad at you if you try.
You are a telescope. Yeah.
So in this next clip, Alex claims that there's 10 places in the country that are like this, but does not name any of them, and is specifically responding to an article about Greenbank.
Sure.
Now, did you know there's a place? There's not just one. They've got these facilities under different covers. And I've been told about these, and I've looked into them, and I've discovered at least 10. There are a lot more. There are at least 10 corridors in the Western world where no cell phone towers or microwave radiation towers are allowed. It turns out, guess who's running this program worldwide?
Bill Gates.
NASA.
Oh, shit.
And, of course, who do you think NASA really is?
Bill Gates?
It's the breakaway civilization.
Close shit. Enough to Bill Gates.
Shit.
I think you get half credit for that. He doesn't prove that NASA's running. As far as I can tell, it's the the National Radio Astronomy Observatory is a separate organization.
Oh, it's
from
a separate
NASA.
Entity?
From what I can tell, I don't have any evidence that NASA is behind this.
Is it just a bunch of hobbyists who kept building a bigger and bigger telescope until it was big enough to hear galaxies exploding?
Maybe. I don't know. So what? You could get the sense already that what Alex's narrative about this is like the globalists have set up this place as their safe haven.
Yeah.
And they're going to go there when shit goes bad.
Right.
And it turns out shit has gone bad because they are heading to West Virginia right now.
Really?
You are under globalist attack by a breakaway civilization. And all the money is running for the exits. Even people worth $20 million, $50 million have got the word and are running. They're gone. They're not around. And when you look around and nobody's there, what's that mean? It means they're getting ready to pull the trigger. We're going to go to break. Please don't forget we have the Save the InfoWars Mega Special. Please support us. It's great products anyways. Storewide.
Awesome.
Nice.
Perfect timing with the beat ad pivot. Good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So they're getting ready to pull the trigger. Now, obviously, you'd be like, I don't know. I don't know if this works out. I mean, I'm hearing it from Alex. How trustworthy of a source is Alex?
Incredibly.
So big extinction's coming. You'll see. I want to stand up against it. I've not steered you wrong yet. I'm not steering myself wrong.
I really just wanted to...
I know, you just love that fucking song.
It's always a delight to hear Policy of Truth on the show. I halfway only pulled that clip because of that. But then the other part is like he's trying to reinforce this idea that the globalists are all heading to West Virginia. I've never steered you wrong. That is also a comical idea, appealing to your own credibility.
Not good.
Nonsensical. He's steered us wrong. At every turn.
I just
perhaps
don't...
every turn.
Yeah, I would say every turn. I can't think of any specific turns where he's gotten it right.
No.
Although the DOT is on the streets.
There are instances probably where he did steer people right, but only in service of later steering them wrong.
Right.
Or like changing his position arbitrarily.
When you think he's going to zig, that's when he zags.
Don't bring Zog into this because it means something completely different in this context. So in this next clip, we get to get a sense of why Alex is telling his audience about this. And it's not because, like, the benign version of it is buy up property in West Virginia. That's the benign version.
Yeah.
But if you know anything about Alex, you know that there's also a nefarious part of this.
He wants to build a dome.
That's not it.
Okay.
But when we come back, I'll finally get to all of it. I wanted to give you the precursor. I want to give you all the history of it, the basics, and the setup, and a gestalt, just a basic outline, before I show you where they are and where they're moving to and what they're doing and how it's all hidden in plain view. Because I want you, when they release the bioweapon and most of your family dies, if we're unable to stop this, I want you, because there's always a percentage that survive it, I want you to know where they are so you know what to do.
Uh-huh.
And so you know who to come after.
Oh, boy.
What?
I want you to know where to go with your roving bands of post-apocalyptic murder gangs after the
There's
bioweapon
There's always some
release.
Survivors.
Right. I want to direct you all to West Virginia.
Where you can find Mako Shark Rampant.
I would say that, like, that's delusional and nonsensical, but at the same time, like, you understand that the fiction of the coming bioweapon release is not essential to what he's telling people to do?
Nope.
Like,
you could move there at any time.
Or you could go kill people there at any point.
Anytime.
You don't have to wait for the bioweapons to kill all of your family.
Right?
Why would you do that? They're there.
Yeah, exactly.
This is real fucked up. I mean, I know hiding behind this, hypothetical triggering event of it being okay to murder the globalists.
Right.
Is great legally for Alex, maybe. But it doesn't work for me, in terms of this being an ethically okay thing to do. He knows what he's doing.
Oh yeah.
He knows what he's doing. He's directing people to go to West Virginia and fuck people up.
Right.
So, in this next clip, Alex explains that, you know, he knows about this. Right. He knows about this now. Because he's read an article.
Yes.
Which is good.
All you need.
He's read an article in the New York Times that we'll discuss in a moment. But that's not what he's basing all this on.
Okay.
15 years ago.
Sure.
The globalists tried to get him to move to West Virginia. This story is not true.
And that's why they hate my guts so much, because I know their entire operation. And I'm going to blow it wide open when we come back. I will tell you their main armored redoubt and where they are. And they even offered me, through three different Hollywood people at the time, to move to West Virginia. And I didn't even know at the time what they meant when I got the offer. Now I know. I was offered 15 years ago to move to West Virginia where I'd be safe.
I really think he's putting people in danger in West Virginia, but I mean, putting such a focus on it like this, but also, like, I would believe that there's a possibility that someone's like, why don't you fucking move to West Virginia, asshole? I imagine someone might have said that to him 15 years ago, this story doesn't check out. Also, why wasn't that always a part of your public rhetoric about this?
Don't even worry about it.
Why didn't you bring up, like, huh, it doesn't always make sense, but they tried to get me to move to West Virginia, then, oh, you get this other piece of information that fits in with them telling me to... This is nonsense.
I love that his view of the globalists, every time there's a new narrative going on, he also has a personal connection to it.
Always.
Where the globalists, like, he seems to be foiling the globalists in his early life, Pinky in the brain. Yeah. That kind of thing.
Wandering through and foiling their plans.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Yeah.
This is just taking his fictionalized backstory and adding new details to it in order to fit whatever narrative he's pushing in the present. It's dumb shit.
Yep.
So in this next clip, I told you there's a New York Times story, and that came out a couple of days ago when he did this, a couple of days before Sunday. And I already referenced an article about this Green Bank area from 2015.
Yeah.
So it's not like it was a secret or anything like that. But this couple day old editorial article, Alex is going to try and read, and he just riffs on it pretty irresponsibly.
So the land where the internet ends, Green Bank, West Virginia, a few weeks ago, I drove. This is Pagan Kennedy, who's a photographer, and Damon Winter, contributing opinion writer. A few weeks ago, I drove down a back road in West Virginia and into a parallel reality. Oh, your kids don't die of brain tumors? 50 years ago, it was unheard of for kids to have cancer. Now it's everywhere.
I believe it's where everybody is above average.
I'm sorry. Let me just read the article. Let's see if I can shut up.
He can't. He does not. He's not able to.
No.
He keeps interrupting and
surprise.
Riffing. So the article that Alex is basing this whole West Virginia is the redoubt of the globalist because there's no wireless signals there narrative. It was published in the New York Times on June 21st, 2019. The CNN article I read from about this very same town, the very same details about the lack of wireless, was posted 5 years prior, and it's far from the only article about Green Bank. Yet here's Alex just stumbling across this story as if it's just now come to the surface. The New York Times piece is an editorial in the opinion section, and it's a first-person experience-based article about the author visiting this town and what they learned from it. If I had to sum it up, it's basically that we're all way too connected to the internet and our phones, and by going to a place with none of that stuff, you're able to fully experience just how much you rely on those bits of technology just as a default.
Right. Walden.
Coexisting with the phones is probably a necessity of modern life, but there's something deep down that calls out for these places where they don't exist, and there's value in preserving those places. especially for people who really resonate with that.
Yeah.
That's mostly the point of the article.
For sure.
What isn't in the article is any mention of the elites.
Are you sure?
No mention that people are moving there or anything close to what Alex is talking about.
Okay.
The article puts the town's population at 150. So it looks like they may have had a net gain in population of 7 since 2015.
That's kind of a big deal. Yeah. For them, that's what, a 10% increase?
Percentage-wise, perhaps, yeah. The article says nothing, about, even close to what Alex is talking about. So in this next clip, he editorializes a little bit more and tries to pretend that this this satellite is somehow, or not satellite, telescope, is much more nefarious than it actually is.
The residents do without not only cell phones, but also Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi.
Microwave ovens, which also kill you, and any other devices that generate electromagnetic signals. What a bunch of throwbacks there at the giant NSA, NASA, DARPA command base. They're so backwards, those. He goes on how eclectic all these scientists and rich people are.
He says that it's a NASA, NSA, DARPA command base with literally no evidence. He's just making that up. That is absolute bullshit. That's not in the article. He has no primary source to back that up. It's just him. It's just what he thinks and feels.
Yeah.
Also, the like talking about the eclecticness of the people who live there, they aren't elites or rich. They're just residents of this town. Like, it, and not all of them work at the telescope.
Right.
That town was there.
Right.
You know, like, he's presenting it as like, oh, aren't they so weird? Oh, these elites. It's people who live in a town of 140 people.
Yeah.
So it's a small town living. There is an eclecticness. And you look at the pictures of the people, some of them are like that one guy, Harold
Quist. They're just from West Virginia.
He's a 90-year-old dude who lives in that town. He's not one of the elites.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
he's got a technologically advanced doorbell. That is elite as shit right there.
They talk about how they have to use the fucking payphone at the little corner store.
That's fun.
That's not the elites.
That's the elites, Dan.
Nonsense. Nonsense.
The elites use telegraphs these days.
He's just making all of this up. And here he goes on to make up another detail.
This town, in other words, calls out to many kinds of eccentrics. And I guess I'm one of them. And I did some more research on this last few days. They're building all these massive mansions and underground bases being built.
Show your work. Cite your sources on the underground bases that are being built.
Can't.
Show me any indication of
this. Classified.
Okay, whatever.
Classified. They're underground bunkers. You think they're going to put those in the New York Times?
If it's classified, then I got to go. I got to go. I can't have this conversation. Yeah. I mean, it's fun. It's, you know, like, this is fun.
Yeah.
Comparatively.
Yeah.
For an Alex Jones narrative. It's because it's just like, oh, this is Project Camelot.
Right. What if the telescope was the Getty Museum?
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
100%.
Yeah,
this
yeah,
is
yeah.
Stupid shit.
This is dumb.
Yeah. I don't know. It's, there's a charm to it that's been absent from Alex for a long time. And I think that the charm is, it still has an edge to it in terms of like trying to direct people.
Right. He's ruining people's lives for sure.
Or at least has the potential to.
Yes, yeah.
But in this next clip, he talks a little bit more about the New York Times article. And it's, again, inaccurate.
It all admittedly manipulates the electrochemical neurons in your brain. And it's not just being outside. This stuff is killing us. And the establishment knows it. And they're running away from it all over. Special communities are being formed. And the elites are all moving in. It even gets into this article.
So that's not true. The article doesn't get into that. The closest it comes is when the author brings up a reservation in central Idaho where artificial light isn't allowed. It's a place where you can protect people's ability to enjoy the stars unencumbered by the light of the cities. As someone who loves to camp, I definitely think that's super cool and a very worthwhile initiative to undertake. It has nothing to do with creating special communities where people are safe from 5G. It has to do with saving unmonetizable things that business interests would never protect on their own, like silence, stillness, and the ability to see the universe with the naked eye. In short, Alex is fucking stupid. How stupid? So stupid that he just decided to forget about this line in the article he's covering. Quote, in 2012, the National Science Foundation considered a proposal to shut down the Green Bank Observatory and ended up slashing its support by about 40%. Huh. That's under Obama's term. But if he's a big old globalist, why would he allow the funding to be slashed for his super-secret getaway base in the middle of West Virginia to be, taken down 40%? Does Alex not realize that as soon as that telescope facility runs out of funding and has to shut down, there's no reason for the wireless signals to be banned there? So this little line kind of punctures the entire premise of the conspiracy, that the globalists are somehow running. Like, it's ludicrous. Drives me crazy. Like, the debunking of his own shit is in the article he's covering.
Yeah.
Or a strong indication that none of this makes sense. It happens so often.
Or it's evidence that funding for the program has gone from the Science Foundation to DARPA, the CIA, Obama's Netflix promotions, all of it.
That is not the case.
All in there.
That's not the case.
It's got Steph Curry's new show, Holy Moly, about how they play miniature golf or whatever.
I thought it was about cooking chocolate-based mole.
Holy Moly?
Yeah. So Alex has read this New York Times article, clearly hasn't internalized it very well, thinks it's a big old conspiracy in the West Virginia is where the globalists are hiding out, and Alex realizes, I got to make a move.
But I said, it's still slow death for all of us. And I said, I can still come back to town and do stuff remotely, but I said, we got to get to some area that doesn't have all this. And I know there's elite zones that don't have it, because I can't look at my kids and watch them slowly dying. It's real. And the establishment's all running to these other areas, hoping we don't notice. I can't believe the New York Times even wrote about this.
New York Times?
Also, they didn't write about this. So, I mean, I couldn't believe it if they did that either. I'd be in the exact same position, but it turns out they didn't write about it, though, or at least what you're saying.
Yeah.
So
it does seem like they are literally frying us like a poached egg, insofar as they are not frying us at all.
Yeah. So, Alex, one of his last segments of the show, he's been talking about this fucking nonsense pretty much the entire show.
That's great.
And he ends by yelling about how the globalists are trying to run, but he's not going to let them.
Sure.
The establishment is running from everything they've deployed against us. The mountains of debt, the giant third world populations they've weaponized, the smartphones, the G5, the bioweapons. The leftist garbage. None of them give their kids iPhones. None of them do all this. They're running from what they're doing to us, but they'll never escape the blowback. I'll make sure of it.
It's kind of a threat. So I think that's stupid, but that seems to indicate that that's a large part of why he's interested in covering this.
Yeah.
It seems like as much of the fun is there, it is kind of like a, I hope someone gets hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is fucked up.
For sure.
It's a fucked up thing to run through your editorial practices.
Yeah. Yeah, everything he does is dripping with threat these days.
Some sort of danger.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, though, because he does this, and he talks about, you're trying to run, but I'm not going to let you. I have completely misrepresented this New York Times article. I'm pretending that this Green Bank area has been a secret, but it's been covered repeatedly. I've found articles from 2009 in the BBC about this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a secret in any way. Everyone knows this. Everyone understands this. The information would be available.
Right.
And so this is a real good punchline for his June 23rd show.
So we just laid out the incredible real secrets of 5G that nobody else has laid out. The last hour and a half that we've covered is legendary intel. I'm telling you, I don't usually say that's legendary intel. That is as close as you're going to get to the truth as there is.
Nope. Legendary.
Okay.
I love those sorts of moments when Alex is like getting real reflective and then like, I killed it. It was awesome. It was, you know, you have those moments sometimes, or like in the past of doing stand up where someone has a terrible set and they come off and they're like, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
I think I crushed.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
You just have that feeling of like,
Twitter and Facebook is rife from with people who were at, who I was at the show with who just did terribly. And then they're like, thanks to them for bringing me out. I had such a great time and all that shit. And I'm like, ooh.
That's exactly what Alex is manifesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's gross. So we get to the 24th now, and I told you it's a brick wall for me. Like, I enjoyed listening to Alex try and talk about Green Bank, West Virginia.
Right.
But then we can't, like, just off a cliff.
The quickening is here. The best way to explain it is this, as I tend to do now on a routine basis. I've been on air 25 years plus now. 25 years. And I would say maybe once in the first 5 years would I say this is the most important broadcast we've ever done. And then about 10 years ago, I might say it once a year. About 5 years ago, I'd say it about once a month. And now I say it about every week, because each broadcast is just covering what's happening in the world, and the developments are incredible.
So that's not, like, too bad so far. But it just because you overinflate the importance of what you're talking about doesn't mean that the world is... Like, it has no bearing on whether or not this news is important or not, just because you have gotten more desperate.
Isn't that just a man literally saying, I used to have to cry wolf once every year. Mm-hmm. Now I cry wolf all the time because that's what's making me the money.
I used to yell less. People stopped listening to me, so now I yell all the time, and therefore the things I'm yelling about are much more important.
Far more important.
I think that it's along those lines. It's unconvincing as an argument.
Yes, yeah.
For sure. And then we get to this here where we find out why the 24th sucks.
Election meddling, not by the Ruskies, but by the Googlers. Sounds like a Batman villain. The Googler. Breaking news. Project Veritas blows Google censorship conspiracy. Wide open. Project Veritas reveals staggering proof that Google is a giant election meddling factory. I wrote that headline. I think we should change it. Army.
Okay. Then he gets into a little bit of a deconstruction of like, we need a better headline on that. I do agree with him, before we get into anything else, that the Googler does sound like maybe a villain from a serial series.
Yeah, I can see that.
So this sucks. I was dreading getting back into present-day Alex Jones shit in the preparation for this episode, and to my surprise, I found something that was fun on Sunday, in the form of Alex thinking that this long public super telescope was somehow the refuge that the globalists would go to survive the rollout of 5G. Kind of fun. Outside of the whole, I'm telling you this so you know where to find them and kill them aspect of that rhetoric, that's kind of the Alex Jones I can stomach pretty easily. It's kind of fun. So, of course, the next day, he was going to become completely overwhelmed by one of my least favorite types of Alex, the Alex who's buying super hard into yet another Project Veritas stunt. I watched the entire 25-minute Veritas video, and once again, it's very clear that it's based on deceptive editing and willful misunderstandings about the topic it's covering. In it, intrepid reporter James O'Keefe talks to an anonymous whistleblower from within Google, whose big scoop seems to be just that Google doesn't randomly produce search results, and that's some level of curation needs to be done.
Right.
I'm not sure what the alternative is, but I would imagine it would be a completely non-functional search engine, but whatever. The argument hinges on them deprioritizing content that's bullshit, which is a real big problem for people whose life's work is monetizing bullshit, and so here we are. Honestly, there's no smoking gun in this video, no real cogent point, just rampant insinuation of evil doing by Google, which is run by SJWs who have it out for Trump.
Of course.
I sincerely don't care about this video. James O'Keefe is such a longtime con man that I really just can't take anything he produces too seriously. I would think that anyone who had any actual scoop about anything in the real world would know better than to call him, when there's plenty of nonpartisan investigative reporters ready and willing to take on issues related to big tech. You don't call James O'Keefe when you have a scoop. You call him when you have an idea for a stunt. That said, I want to point out a couple things that are hilarious in this video. Most of it is just James O'Keefe interviewing this whistleblower whose voice is altered and covered by, is physically covered in shadows.
Oh no.
To obscure his identity.
Really? One of those like Nightline ABC News. Like,
I work at Google.
Yeah, there we go.
That said, even though he's covered in, a shadow and his voice is altered, one of the first things this supposed whistleblower says in the video is, quote, I believe sunlight is the best disinfectant. Which is something that takes brass balls for an anonymous guy talking to James O'Keefe to spit out.
I was halfway expecting his name to be on a chyron underneath there.
That'd be awesome. So, James asks the whistleblower about a specific meeting where content filtering was discussed. And this was one of my big red flags. The whistleblower says that the meeting was held at a Masonic temple. Now, why would Google do that? Google has a shitload of office space and are perfectly capable of holding meetings in their own buildings. Like, this detail is very curious to me. It kind of feels like someone making too big of a swing at making a conspiracy.
Yeah, that's such like a, that whole Google culture of the tech startup where it's like, we don't have cubicles. Everything's open. Here's some pinball games over there. Also, we take meetings in Masonic temples from time to time. Dude, it's a real cool place to work.
I mean, I worked at Groupon for quite a while, and they have the same thing with, like, we got video games and, like, bouncy balls to sit on, but they still have fucking meeting rooms.
Nope. They have to rent out Masonic temples all the time.
So then the whistleblower goes on to list off YouTube channels who have been held down by Google's meddling. One of his examples is Tim Pool. And Tim Pool had an interesting response to that on Twitter when he said, quote, "My channel is absolutely not being suppressed. I can't speak for anyone else, but my views are up over 3,500% from last year." An hour later, he tweeted, quote, "This is not true for my channel. Recommendations are up, views are up, revenue is up." Wonder how this super insider whistleblower could have gotten that wrong. Kind of feels like he was just choosing cool names in the free speech grift community, and one of them didn't realize that now is not the time to be honest.
Yeah.
Jump on board, Tim Pool.
No shit.
Dave Rubin did.
What an idiot.
Dave Rubin's on board.
Rubin jumped on board?
Yeah.
What an idiot,
The whistleblower
Pool.
Named Dave Rubin also, and PragerU, and both of them are like, yeah, fuck
those,
yeah.
And those
We're
are
being
way
held
up.
Down. We're being held down.
Bullshit.
Yeah. So I tip my hat tentatively to Tim Pool for not playing along with this bullshit. So the whistleblower says two things at the end of the video that are a little bit discrediting, I think. The first is kind of hilarious. When he's describing why he's coming forward, he says he doesn't like that the people at Google are working in the shadows while he's literally talking through a voice box sitting in a shadow. So that's kind of funny.
I also don't like anonymous sources.
I also don't like people who change their voice.
That was dangerously close to Jesse Ventura.
The other thing he does is a little less funny. James asks him, "What do you think is going to happen next for you?" And this alleged whistleblower replies with a long pause, then says, quote, "Hopefully I get away with it." "Hopefully I get away with it" is generally the way someone phrases not a good action. Typically, people say, "Hopefully I get away with it," when they're hoping to get away with doing something they know isn't right for them to do. Like, oh, I don't know, working with a perpetual fraudster in a publicity stunt. You wouldn't phrase it as, "I hope I get away with it."
God, that was Jacob Wall, wasn't it?
It might have
totally
been.
Totally him.
It, you know what? I wouldn't put it past
it
him.
It really could be, couldn't it?
Yeah. So the other big piece of this video is secretly recorded footage of an alleged high-level Google executive named Jen Janai, who is where they get a soundbite that they're going to run with, and Alex is going to talk about how Google is trying to stop another, quote, Trump situation from happening.
Right.
Well, in the aftermath of the video's release, Ms. Janai she's been a bit more immediately public than a lot of the other past victims of Project Veritas's bullshit. She clearly explains that they edited her comments out of context and that the Trump situation she said Google wanted to avoid was the foreign intervention and interference
in
social media, not Trump winning.
They weren't playing spades.
No.
Okay.
No. So she explains what happened to her in the lead up to this video that they took of her being shot. Quote, "In late May, I accepted an invitation to meet with a few people who claimed to be from Two Step Tech Solutions. They said they wanted to chat with me about a mentoring program for young women of color in tech, an area I've long been passionate about." She goes on to say, quote, "I was having a casual chat with someone at a restaurant and used some imprecise language. Project Veritas got me. Well done." Probably also important to point out that because of the video, Janai has been receiving a flood of abusive messages and says she's been doxxed.
There it is.
One message she received said, quote, "Your ideology will be shredded to pieces just moments before you get executed for treason. You're living lended time. Enjoy till then." The video includes complete misrepresentations of what Janai is involved in at Google intentionally, because the message is more important than the truth. And if O'Keefe has to completely terrorize Jen Janai in order to push that message, so be it. Honestly, the irony here is that O'Keefe thinks this video proves his victimhood, when in reality all it does is demonstrate the exact danger that exists when you allow people like him to operate freely. Ultimately, what it comes down to is furthering two important goals, this Project Veritas piece. One, right-wing propagandists desperately trying to present the consequences of their actions as noble victimhood. Repackaging that is a very important goal that this furthers. And two, creating a preemptive narrative for why Trump really won in 2020, even if he loses the election. That's all that's going on here. There are definitely problems with the tech industry, but ironically, stunts like this distract from real problems, because people like Alex and O'Keefe don't care about the real problems. They care about their petty battles and furthering their own propaganda goals.
Yeah, they're setting up a Trump doesn't have to leave even if he loses the election.
I don't know if they're doing that. That is a possibility.
I think they are.
Well, it's possible.
Yeah.
But I think another possibility is crafting a way for their propaganda to exist in a post-Trump world.
Right.
Should Trump lose and whoever the Democrat who wins become president and everything goes smoothly, they need a way to not that be a defeat. And if they preemptively create all this everyone cheated kind of stuff.
3 million illegals voted in the last 100%. Election, yada, yada, yada. Yeah.
There is a still nefarious but less insidious and dangerous version of it that is just like, well, we still need to sell shit if Trump leaves.
Right.
So we better get ready for that. And this helps with that.
You know, I think, and I could be wrong about this, but couldn't that place still charge James O'Keefe and his Project Veritas buddies for coming into the federal building?
I don't know. I don't
think
so.
And give them jail time? Can they still do that?
I'm not entirely sure. But, if other people want to sue him, they can. And actually, it's interesting because Alex brings up that, the idea of him being sued in this next clip while he's trying to present the idea that this 25-minute video isn't edited. When it is.
Sure. It of is course very it edited. Is.
My God, when you watch this video that goes on for 25 minutes, because they always put out the unedited so they can't claim it's edited, they've won federal court cases where they claim that they doctored video and Veritas won.
So one thing that should be pointed out is that Project Veritas may be one of the things that's getting sued right now more than Alex Jones. One of the few things that has more lawsuits. As far as I can tell, they have multiple active lawsuits against them, which they've tried to have thrown out of court unsuccessfully. It appears that there is at least 5 active cases against O'Keefe and Veritas in the books right now. Then there's the case that we discussed in the past where James tried to sneak into Representative Mary Landrieu's office pretending he was a phone repairman, which ended up with him pleading guilty and being sentenced to 3 years probation and 100 hours of community service. Then there was Juan Vera, an Acorn employee who sued O'Keefe after his bullshit pimp video came out. O'Keefe didn't have permission to record their private conversation, so O'Keefe tried to argue that the conversation wasn't private. The judge didn't agree, so O'Keefe quickly settled the case, paying Vera $100,000. I can find no evidence that O'Keefe has won cases in court about the way he manipulatively edits videos, but he has had cases against him dismissed on the grounds of things like he can record someone at a bar without their consent because there's not a reasonable expectation of privacy at a bar.
Right.
This is why all of his videos are shot in bars. There's no way that what he's doing would be legal if he weren't intentionally trying to secretly record private conversations in very public places. That's how he fucked up at Acorn. That's why that guy got $100,000.
Yeah.
It's because that took place in an office, not in a bar.
Right.
So you take it to places where there's not a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Yeah.
Then you can do whatever you want that would be illegal anywhere else.
Oh, man. Can he do something illegal towards us? I want to sue him.
But you couldn't if it was in public.
Right. That's why we trap. No, that's then it's on us.
Well, I mean, that's another thing that Jen Janai was talking about in her post about it. Like, I hope that by talking about this and explaining, people will be more careful about accepting meetings from people who might be trying to fuck with you.
Right.
And I think that is important. I mean, people got to recognize that, like, we live in a time now where you need to be a little bit defensive about propaganda. People are going to try and fuck with you.
Yeah.
Especially if you work for a company like Google or Twitter. You're going to be a target of these people.
Yeah, and they clearly researched her because what was more a honey trap than, like, getting women of color in tech for her? Yeah.
No, I mean, 100%.
Brilliant. Yeah. Their only smart move they've ever made.
No, I mean, they make some smart moves, but it's all in, it's that evil smart.
Yeah. Cunning.
Sure. Crafty. So, in this next clip, Alex talks about how, James O'Keefe is a hero.
Mm.
But he has a ranking of heroes.
Okay.
That is a little bit interesting to see where.
I take it Lincoln isn't going to be up there.
No. Although he probably wasn't killed by John Wilkes Booth.
That's true.
As we learned on our last
episode.
That's
true. You're right.
No, there's a hierarchy and James O'Keefe is pretty close to the top, but he's not at the top.
Okay. Drudge?
Project Veritas champion, hero, all around badass. See, I don't admire Michael Jordan. Very entertaining to watch. Amazing athlete. Put it this way. I admire Michael Jordan, but on a scale of 1 to 10, Michael Jordan's like a 2. Project Veritas is like a 9. Trump's like a 9. Firefighter that goes in a house, he knows it's collapsing to get kids out. It's burned to death. That guy's a 10.
Okay. James O'Keefe ties with Trump, but just short of firefighter who dies in a building.
Oh, God.
That's ridiculous.
This person is insane.
Yeah.
That is just, there are so many times where we get some kind of weird random insight into his, like, if he started writing listicles, you would think he was a madman.
Top 10 heroes.
Yeah. Like, it'd be crazy.
Yeah. So, in this next clip, Alex talks about, Apple. And, man, this was a difficult clip for me, because I noticed something that underlied a lot of his rhetoric, about Apple and about Tim Cook.
Mm-hmm.
And, I feel like this deserves to be discussed. Here we go.
What did the head of Apple say? They asked him, why did you ban Alex Jones completely off everything and even ban his top app? It was number one. The people voted it number one news app by downloading it. Number one. Ahead of the Wall Street Journal, Fox News. They were number one. And he said, he's a horrible person. I told you. Well, I'm like a curator in a museum. And because I'm gay, it's okay, all right? Yes, I run death camps in China, the worst factories, with suicide nets, but I'm gay. I'm like, dude, I don't care what you do with your ding-a-ling, Tim Cook. So I've been told by folks that know him, he is major pissed at me talking about that. I'm just saying, running death camps, you don't get a pass because you're gay.
There's, first of all, the boiling down of being gay to what you do with your ding-a-ling, which is, not great. But Alex does have a small point in the fact that, like, someone's sexual orientation doesn't get them off the hook for horrible business practices.
True.
I'm fine with that being,
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
sad.
Yeah.
But I really find what he's saying about Tim Cook to be pretty offensive, and I want to tell you why. Alex is assuming that he's being targeted by Tim Cook, in part because he won't stop talking about how Tim Cook is gay. Alex says that Tim Cook is major pissed at him about it. And this framing of how Alex is describing his problems with Cook is where things become really problematic. Also, that horrible voice is not helping.
No, that was, ugh.
Alex's criticism isn't that Tim Cook is running suicide factories in China. It's that he's running suicide factories in China, and no one except Alex calls him out on it because everyone else is blinded by Tim Cook's sexuality. This is an important distinction because Alex doesn't give a shit about people working in unsafe conditions. He's staunchly anti-union, and his favorite politician, Ron Paul, frequently introduced bills to eliminate OSHA. The things that eliminated here, many of the terrible parts of the conditions in Chinese factories, are things that Alex is explicitly and actively against. So his complaints about the plight of workers in China seems really hollow to me. I want to be clear about something, and that is that I support the workers of China, and nothing I'm about to say here should be interpreted as me minimizing the difficult and exploitative situation that many of them are in. What I'm going to say here is specifically about how little Alex Jones knows about China and Apple. Every single time Alex talks about China and Apple, he brings up suicide nets. That's the only frame of reference he has for the story, and I understand why. It's a horrifying image, people killing themselves at their workplace. It's bleak, it's relatable, and it's very resonant with the audience of people who may not totally love their jobs. For some context, though, this story about nets is from 2011. And Alex is specifically leaving out the part of that story where, in addition to installing that net, Foxconn also responded to a rash of suicides by raising the wages of employees, which was one of the motivations ascribed to the people who jumped off the roof previously. Alex has been repeating this story as if it's current for 8 years. Meanwhile, from 2012 to the present, 4 employees have killed themselves at the Foxconn factory that Alex is talking about, which is 4 too many, but let's try and put this in perspective. For one, the Foxconn factory is not like most factories that we imagine. It's fucking gigantic, with a staff that's 10 times the size of the largest factory in the United States. According to Business Insider, they employ about 350,000 people, which is approximately 40,000 more people than live in St. Louis. In 2017, 43 people killed themselves in St. Louis. So you look at just rates of numbers of people.
Right.
In 2016, 291 people killed themselves at the workplace in the United States. While China has a whole lot of work to do in terms of working conditions, we have our own problems at home that we should be addressing too. And I've never heard Alex bring up U.S. workplace suicides, ever. Similarly, I've never heard him talk about France Telecom, which had more than 60 employees commit suicide between 2008 and 2011. That's far more than the number of people who killed themselves at the Foxconn plant, and Telecom had has a way smaller workforce of employees, so the rate is substantially higher. Alex doesn't talk about that either, not because he's covering it up, but because he doesn't care. He has no reason to attack a French phone company. It's not in his interests. Alex has an evocative image from news from 8 years ago, and he uses it daily as a weapon to attack the people he perceives as his enemies, demanding they solve an issue he doesn't care about and knows that the only real solution to is government regulating business, which he's super against. It's a trick. He's playing a trick on his audience by appealing to the emotion that very reasonably and rightfully should be evoked by the idea of a factory putting up nets to stop people from killing themselves. He's using that as a trick.
Yeah, it almost seems like he's mad that they're killing themselves in China. Like, the factory job should be coming here, and our workers should be killing themselves.
Well, he certainly wouldn't be talking about it if they did.
Exactly.
So when I see Alex behaving this way and wearing the costume of someone who cares about the working conditions of Chinese factory employees, I don't believe him. It's just an easy way for him to attack Google. And, you know, it's definitely not the reason why he's attacking Google. It's not his motivation. When you hear him make the argument that no one will criticize Tim Cook for the Chinese factories because he's gay, that is an attack on Tim Cook specifically because he's gay. He's basically saying that his being gay gives him an elevated status that wouldn't be afforded to a heterosexual CEO, and that's complete shit. And it's important to point this sort of thing out, while still being very clear that Foxconn and everybody else needs to do a better job for their workers. You can accept that as a true thing, and still call this sort of bullshit out. And here's why that's important. Jordan, did you know that Tim Cook is literally the first Fortune 500 CEO to be openly gay?
I did not know that.
Fortune 500 has been published since 1955, and Tim Cook became CEO in 2011 and didn't come out until 2014. That's a good, I don't know, 69 years where representation didn't exist for young, aspiring LGBTQ business folks. There was no one to point to and think, I could belong in that boardroom. And I'm not just assuming that's the case. That's the reason he came out in 2014. In an interview with CNN, Cook describes how there had been rumors about his sexuality, but he kept his life private until he started to receive letters from youth who had been bullied because of their orientation. And he realized that it would be, quote, selfish for him to keep quiet when being public could help those people. Despite the problems with Apple, and there are many to choose from, this is what Alex is attacking about Tim Cook. In the same way that young LGBTQ kids could be moved by seeing their identity reflected in the CEO of one of the biggest companies in the world, Alex sees that too, and he's threatened by it. So ultimately, what I'm saying is fuck Alex Jones. He's a small-minded bigot, completely obsessed with his petty battles. I should also point out that the InfoWars app was never number one. It was number one in the trending category the day after he got kicked off all of the social media platforms.
Yeah.
Which is, what he would call a dead cat bounce.
Right.
So this is all bullshit. I'm pretty upset. I'm not upset, but like, it's disgusting to see this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it easily flies under the radar of just his ads, Alex being stupid.
Right.
But when you dissect it a little bit, you start to see, like, he doesn't give a shit about what he's complaining about. This is an attack on somebody who he thinks gets special privilege because he's gay. And that's what he's mad about.
Yeah.
It's not the factories.
No,
it's not the nets. It's what he perceives as, like, if I were in his position as a heterosexual CEO, everyone would be mad at me, but everyone gives him the pass because he's gay. That's rank homophobia.
Right. When you're used to being the protected class with the highest status, seeing any other class raised up makes these people feel like stuff is being taken away from them.
Yeah, the zero-sum game approach to social capital
White nationalist, homophobic bullshit is always going to dehumanize any achievement to, you know, the old saying, but in the Reconstruction era South, one of the, operating philosophies was as long as the poorest, most worthless white person feels like they're better than the richest, most successful black person, then we will always win. Like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So for Alex, as long as he's, you know, as long as the gayest CEO or the most successful gay CEO in history is worse than any straight person, he can act with impunity.
I suppose there's probably something to that in how he operates. Here, just to reinforce my sort of my sense that the gayness is what he's responding to, here's how Alex continues.
Even the Communist Party said if you'd pay people a dollar a day more, they wouldn't have to live on the street working for you. And he just said, oh, my gosh, did you know I'm gay? It's like, it's okay. It's okay. He went to China 2 years ago, and he said, I want to censor everybody. I support governments doing it. That was a major headline. But, again, he's gay. As long as a gay person does it, it's liberal. Oh, my gosh, how sweet.
That's insane. And I when I hear stuff like that, I question again, like, does he think this is funny? Like, is this intended comedy on his part?
Ooh, that's...
I don't know.
It can't be.
I
it's so bad.
It's real bad, but I get the sense that I think on some level he is shooting for funny.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, man.
It's really hard to tell, because, like...
Well, if he thinks Rainbow Snatch is funny, who the fuck knows?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's the completely foreign sense of humor.
Right.
It's very difficult to try and gauge.
Right. The non-sense of humor as humor.
Right.
That's...
I've seen tons of stand-up specials where I'll just watch it and be like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And it's possible that he thinks that's funny and like, but even behind it, what, it still doesn't excuse anything. I don't know. So in this next clip, he moves on from all this complaining about Tim Cook and Apple business.
Just real quick, we went to fucking town on Tim Cook whenever the censorship search app started leaking and all that shit.
Well, totally.
Everyone went ape shit on him.
Yeah. He has a lot of justified criticism from people on both sides of the political aisle.
Absolutely.
There's no shielding of him because he's gay.
No.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I always think it's all like, I mean, I'm glad you bring that up because it is important, but it almost feels like taken as read.
Yeah,
Alex
exactly.
Is factually wrong.
For sure. That's the only reason I was like listening to it going like, Dan might say something or not, but it's like, it cannot be pointed out enough that we went absolutely insane on him to the point where it got the project at the very least slowed down. Like, if it weren't for us, Alex's imagined fucking super censorship thing would probably still be going on.
Yeah.
If not already deployed.
So in this next clip, Alex gets into hating women instead of Tim Cook for a little bit.
That's nice.
Which is a
nice little change of pace.
It's a bad change of pace, but whatever.
So it's all up there. U.S. Holocaust Museum denounces AOC's comments on concentration camps. And Ilhan Incest Omar, married to her brother, said she had 3 children with him to get into the country. So
oh,
she
my God.
Bitch about it all day like a Somali pirate boarding your ship.
What?
This little pea brain. Is really pissed. In fact, let's play some of that audio. Walnut brain. You know, she's probably even stupider than somebody like Nancy Pelosi. Maybe Nancy Pelosi's stupider. I'm not sure. She's probably a bigger walnut brain.
Walnut brain. that's a lot of shit. We've gone over all these dumb conspiracies about Ilhan Omar.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's fun because Jacob Wall and Laura Loomer tried to make a documentary proving that Ilhan Omar was married to her brother.
Really?
That was that Exporting Omar or whatever documentary.
No
that,
idea.
Blew up in their faces.
Yeah.
That was a disaster.
Jesus.
So Alex is making a mountain out of a molehill here about the other stuff. The supposed beef between Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the Holocaust Museum. They didn't really denounce her comments as much as they reaffirmed their longstanding position that the museum does not like people comparing things to the Holocaust. The right-wing media, desperate to protect these camps where children are being abused, reported that as some kind of a takedown by the Holocaust Museum. Hannity ran the headline, quote, "Backlash builds. U.S. Holocaust Museum releases rare statement on concentration camp comparisons." But the statement isn't really rare. They put out a press release in December 2018 saying the exact same thing. Dig a little bit into the topic and you'll find plenty of representatives of the museum as well as other scholars in the field of the Holocaust that are strongly against people making analogies between anything from the past or the present as being compared to what happened in the Holocaust.
Yeah, it's they're living what, like Godwin's Law? Is it that one? That any time an argument gets to comparisons to Hitler, it's over? Is that Godwin's Law, or is that a different one?
I believe so. It's partially that, and partially just like it's disrespectful to the
no, of course,
the lived experience of the people who died to use it as a tool to compare something that you don't like to.
Absolutely,
and I think they absolutely have the right to that position. I also think that it's not necessarily disrespectful to the people who died in the Holocaust to note similarities.
Right.
I think there's a respectful way to do it, but I do still appreciate the Holocaust Museum's position. Like, I don't think it's an unfair thing for them to think. I think that all can be true.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you.
So at this point, Alex brings in the number 9 hero.
Okay.
James O'Keefe.
He's on the show?
He is.
Oh, fuck me.
We're not going to listen to too much of it, but in this clip, I just wanted to illustrate, like, how cool James O'Keefe is.
I mean, you couldn't get better descriptors for the names of the departments if you went to Orwell or the protagonist Winston in 1984 who edits out that, remember that movie where he edits out all the newspaper?
Yeah, Ministry of Truth is the Ministry of Lies.
Ministry of Truth.
He thinks that 1984 is primarily a movie. He knows Orwell.
Uh-huh.
But he thinks it's just a movie.
It's a movie.
Yeah. I feel like that's a trend with these guys.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think they're not voracious readers, Dan?
I think.
Not of the classics?
I think they might take in most of their information from YouTube videos.
Could be.
And, what do you call it? Depictions of books in movie form.
Yeah.
So that's great.
They really loved Bill Murray in The Razor's Edge, but they could not pronounce William Somerset Maugham.
No, certainly not. So this is this interview is just James O'Keefe describing what happened in his 25-minute video.
Yeah,
and there's some justifications for things and some explanations. I think he realizes that most people are gonna be like, "This is bullshit." And so he gets a little defensive about it.
People would think this is a conspiracy theory if it weren't for the documents. And one of the documents he gave me says, and I'm going to quote them. This is Google, not me, not you. It says, quote, training data are collected and classified. Algorithms are programmed. Media are filtered, ranked, aggregated, and generated. People like us are programmed. That's a direct quote. People like us are programmed.
So this supposed whistleblower released to Project Veritas about 120 pages of internal documents. And I've looked over them. I don't see anything groundbreaking or even shocking. Basically, it all just boils down to something along the lines of, we didn't realize that our platform was so easily exploitable by people looking to profit off weaponized lying, and now that we do, we should probably do something about it.
Yeah.
That's a lot of it.
Yeah,
that's nice. That James O'Keefe would be responding to. And the other stuff is what we'll get into here in a minute. One image seems to be James O'Keefe's coup de grace, and it shows a flowchart representing the process of how unconscious bias can affect our decisions and how data is classified. It's what he was just reading. What he just quoted is a string of a flowchart. It's not a list of things. It's the steps in a flowchart.
Right.
The last node on the flowchart says, quote, people like us are programmed, which O'Keefe presents as that being the supposed to reflect Google's goal. In context, this isn't a flowchart that shows Google's brainwashing plans. It's a slide in a PowerPoint presentation about the interaction between human input and AI in terms of algorithm creation. Just after this slide in the presentation, there's a slide that says, quote, and unfortunately, we humans have a history of making product design decisions that are in line with defaults and not with the needs of everyone. The we get programmed thing isn't the result. It's discussing a problem that arises from unconsciously accepting default ideas that are dangerous. The presentation goes on to elucidate how the program, or how this problem manifests, discussing how female drivers were 47% more likely to be hurt in car accidents because crash dummies were all based on male body types until 2011.
Right.
Another thing that's important to point out is this is just a slide in a PowerPoint presentation that should be accompanied by a speech. These are just bullet points that are by definition out of context without the full presentation.
Yeah.
This is just intentionally dishonest. Even from their own documents.
Yeah, it's like how facial recognition technology doesn't recognize black people. Because they only tested on white people. There's so many of those, like, I didn't even know I was being biased, but I am.
Yeah, video game systems that have, like, capture have run into problems with that. There's instances of film not having the right hues for non-white skin tones because no one thought, like,
Right.
So, yeah, there's a ton of stuff like that. And that's what they're talking about. When they talk about algorithmic fairness, which is going to come up, I believe, in this next clip, that's the stuff they're talking about.
Yeah.
So let's get to that clip. Here is James O'Keefe lying. Because, I mean...
That's what he does.
Yeah, he's on the show. Why not?
Yeah.
But still, their employees, like you said, are programmed cult members still carrying this out. This is incredible.
Their words, not yours. They say that they're trying to, quote, program the people. And one of the things that Janai says is the reasons we launched the artificial intelligence principles, there it is, ML fairness, is because people were not putting that line in the sand, that they were not saying what's fair and what's equitable. So we're like, we're a big company. We're going to say it. So what Janai is saying is don't bust us up, Elizabeth Warren.
So what she's...
Whoa.
She does talk about that in the manipulatively edited and captured video. But what she's talking about is so when you take what she's talking about, the Trump situation, to not be Trump running, it be the interference and manipulation of algorithms and gaming the system. When she's saying that, like, you shouldn't break us up, it would be a bad idea, because then you have a bunch of smaller companies that are less able to deal with that sort of thing, the manipulation that can be done.
Right, which is debatable.
I'm not sure I agree with her.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not some sort of a, like, don't break us up, we could stop Trump from winning,
which is what they're presenting.
Just bullshit.
Yeah.
So when he's also discussing that Janai said that no one was drawing a line in the sand, and that's, you know, Google's a big company, so why not them? He's completely misrepresenting what she's clearly talking about. A lot of this becomes totally clear if you actually read the documents that Project Veritas released along with this video. A lot of the information in there actually debunks everything that James O'Keefe is saying.
Not a surprise.
No.
They think of those documents as more of like a movie. Like they're based on the documents. You don't need to worry about what's actually written down.
I think he just thinks that, like, the fact that they exist and we have a link to them is going to be proof enough
everybody. I really think he does. I think they all just assume nobody's going to actually read that shit.
Bad news. I did.
Yeah.
So what she means that no one's drawing a line in the sand is that if left to its own devices, a lot of AI and machine learning is going to go horribly astray.
No.
This was seen in how searches for, quote, CEO brought up all male images. Or wedding. If you searched for wedding, it would bring up exclusively white couples. There's a bias that could come from data when it's left unmanaged. These are bad, those examples. But there are instances where this phenomenon became profoundly much more offensive. In 2015, a black man uploaded a photo of himself and a friend at a concert, and the AI labeled the image gorillas. In 2013, a researcher found that if you search for the term black girls, the results were disproportionately more likely to be pornography. A study in 2015 found that ads for high-salary jobs placed on the Times of India website were being shown specifically to male users. These are the sort of instances of unfairness that people like Jen Janai were discussing and working to resolve. You can find an article on The Standard from December of last year where she's discussing this, particularly in reference to a study from a Harvard researcher who found that, quote, when you searched black-sounding names, arrest-related ads were more likely to show up than when you searched white-sounding names. The fairness extends to all other parts of Google's product line. For instance, Janai specifically was working on projects related to speech recognition. How could someone with an accent get full use of speech recognition products? How about someone with a speech impediment or a stutter? These are the sorts of concerns for her career as it relates to fairness. And anyone who did a cursory amount of research into this would know that that's what James O'Keefe is trying to misrepresent. It's clear as day.
Yeah.
When you read the documents that he released, when you do a little bit of looking into, other than the last 24 hours, what imprint does Jen Janai have on the internet?
Yeah.
Find what she was working on before. Find out what context clues you can have for this casual conversation that you've surreptitiously recorded. What might she bring to that conversation that you're not allowing to exist in your footage? And it's this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's an admirable goal, that idea that searching, you shouldn't have an algorithm that when you search for black girls, it's all pornography.
Right.
That is not a pleasant or good experience for black girls.
Or any, well, I mean.
Specifically, but
yeah,
maybe
yeah,
for
yeah,
everybody.
For sure. No, I mean, in terms of just confronting that, sometimes I think that the most terrifying thing for these white nationalists is exposing their own implicit biases far more than their explicit ones.
Hmm.
Because if you have to actually wrestle with the idea, with that very idea of why does the algorithm amplify implicit bias? Because that's really what it's kind of doing right there. It's amplifying that implicit bias.
That's the bias in the data.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so if you have to analyze that for 1 second, if you have to add that into your calculus of life, how could you not extrapolate from that so much?
Yeah.
Just like the idea, just for you to say for 1 second, wait, if I was a black girl and I searched just black girl and all I got was porn, think about how that limits my life automatically.
Yeah, it's
without even considering
it's a catalyst for empathy.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous to people whose stock and trade is
cruelty.
Or the deterioration of empathy.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even the Google documents that Project Veritas released, they're, you know, when discussing like that 47% of women are 47% more likely to be injured in a car accident because of the design of seatbelts.
Right.
Because of crash test dummies being modeled after men.
Right.
There's even a slide in there that's like, now, were those people who designed the crash test dummies hating women?
Right.
Didn't realize it was
just
the default.
Yeah.
And that's exactly, yeah. That's
the same thing is true for so many medications that aren't, like, if it's not specifically made for women, the testing is almost overwhelmingly done on men.
Yeah. Yep. So they're so clearly liars. And this is so clearly a publicity stunt.
Yeah.
It's so clearly, like, once you peel back the top layer of, okay, this is all bullshit, which you could probably just do by guessing.
Yeah.
But when you do, you start to have to ask yourself, like, now why would you do that?
Right.
And the answer is very obvious.
Right.
Very, very obvious. Self-serving reasons, secondarily self-serving reasons, it's all there right in front of you on a platter. So go fuck yourself, James O'Keefe.
100%.
You're lucky you're not in prison for
God.
The things you've done in the past.
And we're unlucky you're not in prison.
The world is unlucky.
Oh, yeah.
So James leaves, and Alex, he keeps saying he's going to play special reports, and he ends up doing that. He does play some special reports.
Some bounds?
No, I don't know if we get a bound.
No bound joints?
No, but I think he's just kind of done. He just is like, oh, fuck. I really did it yesterday. I was legendary yesterday.
Yeah.
And then today I came in, I covered this Project Veritas video. I was very excited about it. 2.5 hours is good enough.
He blew his wad too soon.
Yeah. Special reports.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
before
yeah.
he does, he's got to dehumanize the Democratic field a little bit.
Two nights only, the greatest show on earth, the Democrat debates. So many of them, it takes 2 nights to look at all these cockroaches. Infowars.com/show. Spread the word.
So he's doing a two-night spectacular about the Democratic debates, which will be fucking awesome.
Couldn't he do more about monster trucks?
I would like that.
Yeah.
Instead, he's going to call the Democrats cockroaches, which...
Great.
Again, has a nice lineage as a term. It's not been used well in the past in political discourse.
Oh, it hasn't?
Generally not. Generally, it's been a bad thing.
Okay.
So we got a couple clips left, and it's not the tone I wanted to end the episode on. I generally like to end an episode on maybe a little bit of a upward. Leave people in a better headspace.
Yeah.
But instead, we get a couple clips of Alex yelling about Ilhan Omar. This first one is pretty much just him calling her ugly and stupid.
That's better than what I would expect.
But she sits there with her fake love. Oh, I'm pulling up next to your ship. I'm climbing on. Women are sex slaves in Somalia and have no rights, but I'm going to come here and tell you how good Islam is and how America sucks and shake my finger at you and wear my little get up. Damn, she's so ugly. I'm glad she wears that hood over her head. Like an ugly donkey. She got this donkey literally pissing in our face all day. Give me a break. I mean, my God. You come here, you get elected to Congress in 10 years, you sucked off welfare the whole time, you pig, you America-hating pig, and then you get here and tell us how much we suck all day. Here she is.
So he plays like maybe 3 seconds of a clip of her, but he's so mad that he has to interrupt the clip before it even plays the part he wants because he's got to yell about her more.
Back her up. She just says, we're talking 75 IQ. Okay, inbred like the day is long. But she's got a will to dominate you, and you will bow to her. She's the pirate. She's the king. She comes from the failed state. You're going to bow like a rattlesnake biting you on the neck. Your carotid arteries belong to her fangs.
So, I mean, we know from going back to when it happened, he was in favor of the Somali pirates. And now he's using Somali pirate imagery to demonize her because she's from Somalia, which is bullshit. And all that other stuff is just deeply coded, or not even coded.
No, that is not coded at all.
She has 75 IQ, she's inbred, she's stupid, she's ugly. All this stuff is just like, you are really, really, really triggered by this non-white person in
Congress.
A
non-white person? She's a woman! Ah! That's all he's saying.
All this bullshit, too, about like, Sharia law. Hope you love being thrown off buildings, gay people. And like, she's out there dancing at Pride. Go fuck yourself, Alex.
Yeah.
I mean, it couldn't be more clear. I can't stress enough how unpleasant it was, the jarring disconnect between Sunday and Monday.
Yeah.
And even both of those episodes are disconnected from everything else that's been happening in the present. There is no sense of continuity between any of these episodes. They could almost all exist at any point. I mean, not from like years ago, but that could have been from a month ago.
Right.
Like, it could have.
Well, I mean, you know, not everybody wants Breaking Bad. Some people want X-Files Monster of the Week, Dan. You don't need to do a whole serialized show.
I guess that's true. And I guess stylistically, I don't really have a problem with that.
Right.
It's hard to track. A little bit.
Yeah.
And maybe it would be better served by, like, we do an episode just about Sunday.
Right.
Because there's no development of narratives. There's nothing that's like, okay, I talked about the 5G West Virginia shit on Sunday. Now there's more news.
Right.
There's nothing. It's just like, all right, we're going to spin this plate. Oh, it's already fallen over. Let's start another one. Oh, Jesus. That one's fallen over. It's kind of desperate and really tough. Now, the other thing about it, though, is I'm noticing, I probably have pointed this out, but it always bears mentioning, Alex is almost every day trying to get someone hurt now.
Yeah.
This wasn't the case before. And granted, he was irresponsible and reckless with his language. We see in 2013 him being a real stupid, dumb prick. But the consistency and the regularity with which he seems to be saying things specifically trying to get people hurt, whether it's the targeting of Jen Janai that he's tag-teaming with James O'Keefe, this is dangerous. This is dangerous to her safety.
Mm-hmm.
Or the people of this quiet West Virginia town saying that this is where you can go hunt globalists once the shit goes down.
Right.
Like every single day, there is somebody that is being put in danger by Alex's show. I don't know if it rises to the level of like JAMA's signal. I don't think it does. I don't know what that would require. But this trend is something that is important for people to be aware of. Like when Alex Jones pleads his victimhood status, it's important to know that pretty much every day, something has the potential to go so wrong.
Well, he's been on air 25 years, and he only used to try and get somebody hurt every year or so. And then it was every month or so. And now it's every fucking day.
It's the quickening.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus. What a... Man, I just don't know how you can say all of that shit about Ilhan Omar without the self-awareness to know that everything that you said is
completely and utterly racist beyond.
I think he probably does.
You know, like, there's not, and it's not even like, there's just nothing there but him trying to say, him trying to insult her in any way he possibly can without coming out and just saying, I don't like a brown woman in charge.
It makes me scared.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he is aware of it though. I mean,
right.
I don't know. I think it's important to not be publicly seen as aware of it. But in the same way that James O'Keefe can't be publicly aware of the fact that the documents that he released contradict his claims.
Right.
He can't be publicly aware of the fact that his videos don't depict what he says they do.
Yeah.
He can't. Otherwise, the game is ruined.
Yeah.
Alex can't be publicly aware of how racist he is. Otherwise, the whole game is kind of busted. And now he just becomes another racist demagogue.
Yeah. And he can't be publicly aware that the James O'Keefe video is edited.
Yeah.
It's doctored.
They're all playing a very delicate game of intentional ignorance.
Yeah.
Fake,
plausible deniability.
Yeah,
yeah.
Fake ignorance in order to maintain and perpetuate the con.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's kind of boring on some level.
Yeah, it is. It is such a disappointment anytime you hear that kind of, I'm going to make as many personal insults as I can towards you. I'm going to be as cruel as possible towards you so I don't have to stop and think for 1 second, why don't I want a brown woman in charge?
Yeah, or why do I not want to learn anything more about the policies and try and argue them as opposed to she's a donkey pissing on you and she's also dumb.
Yep.
It's just a shortcut.
Thinking about it, I find the Tim Cook stuff more offensive. Because he's hiding it behind something that is a legitimate criticism and turning a legitimate criticism of Foxconn Factory.
Well, it's certainly a more legitimate criticism 7 years ago.
Right.
I mean, that Business Insider, I don't know how much you can really universalize this.
Right.
But there's a Business Insider article about going to that factory in 2018, and they talked to a ton of the employees, and
like,
not under The watchful
duress.
Eye and
at
gunpoint of the supervisors.
Blink twice if you are being
abused. Talking to them in a bar, drinking, and they were saying like, it's as good or as bad as any other factory.
Yeah.
It's just dumb, bad work.
Right.
So like, I'm not saying that the working conditions are all good everywhere.
Right.
But the specific complaint that he has is so much more relevant in the past, and it's not been updated to deal with the current conditions that are there, because he doesn't give a fuck.
And the issue with that for me is he's attaching that intense homophobia behind that.
Yes.
Whereas with Ilhan Omar attacks, there's nothing behind it. And so it's almost inoffensive in its how pathetic it is.
It's still
you know,
very offensive.
It's totally very offensive. Don't mistake that. Just it's just so obvious. It's like, oh, you just don't like a brown woman in charge.
Yeah.
Like, you've got nothing there.
Yeah.
So
you're blinded by your bigotry and Islamophobia, and congratulations.
And misogyny.
Also, this stuff with Tim Cook probably would be presented differently if he didn't have the narrative from 7 years ago that he knows the muscle memory
of
how to tell.
That's true.
Like, he built up this suicide net narrative years ago, and he just has it in his hip pocket to pull out whenever Tim Cook or Apple comes up.
Right.
This is all shit.
Yeah.
But this episode is worth it if only because we learned how to poach an egg.
I like to know when telescopes are. You know, I need to know where they are.
I need to know
if there's a guy in Britain with one.
I would love to go down to Green Bank. That sounds awesome.
It does sound pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah. I think I probably couldn't live there.
Even
but
for
I'd
me.
Love to go.
Yeah. Even for me, who cannot leave his phone anywhere further than 5 feet from him.
I think you'd still be excited by a fucking giant telescope.
Hell yeah, I would.
Yeah. So we'll be back on Friday with another episode, but until then, we have a website.
We do have a website. It's knowledgefight.com.
We are on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight and @GoToBedJordan.
And we're on Facebook.
We are on Facebook, and you can also download our podcast through iTunes, through Overcast.
Sure.
Through certain species of plant.
Really?
Yeah. The tulips. Tulips specifically for some reason.
That's why they're so hard to grow.
Exactly.
Oh, that's orchids.
Ooh.
fuck my reference up. Oh, well. So, as we come to the end of this, I would say that Jen Janai has not killed anybody.
Probably not.
But one person who technically probably has is Alex Jones.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.